Very pleased to say we've got Nick Ahern coming into the show again. Of course, Nick has a fantastic career as a professional golfer in his own right, and very well qualified to talk about the subjects we're about to do, because he is a very fine match player, the only player in history to have beaten Tiger Woods twice in match play golf. That is outstanding in itself. But he also knows what it's like to be formidable at match play as opposed to stroke play, which he is also successful in as well. So much coming up and so much just been that we thought we'd get Nick on the phone, and he's been good enough to join us again. Nick, good morning to you. Thanks for being on the show again.
Morning, Smithy. Always great to chat.
Look, I was fascinated by the match play, because we don't see a lot of it. We see it in the Ryder Cup. We see it every now and then, and it's all about stroke play. So tell us a wee bit about this match play tournament. Just how damn hard is it to win? We're looking at 7 rounds of golf in 5 days, so physically much more demanding than normal.
Yeah, definitely. Once you get through, well, and the thing is, they've had these group stages now. So when I was playing the match play, it was just quite simply top 64 players in the world. 64 plays the first player, 63rd plays the second, and so on and so forth. So if you lost in the first round, you're out. And if you win, you just keep going. But now they do these round robins, which I kind of understand, because they want to keep the big players there and stop someone like a Nick Ahern beating Tiger Woods. So then the main draw card's out and you've got this left-hander left over. But it stops that sort of thing from happening, because it keeps the big stars there for at least 3 days, which, you know, the sponsors love that style of thing. But there is a lot of golf involved. And then once you get through the group stage, then they go into the round of 16, and then all of a sudden it does become that elimination style format. And I guess, what is it, 7, 18 holes? If you go the full distance, the incentive in match play is to finish your matches early. You know, try and get it done 7 and 6, so you only end up playing 12 holes, and you're feeling fresh for your next match, especially when you have to play 36 holes in one day. So, that's the beauty of the format. If you go extra holes every time and you go on 20, 21, 22 holes, well, then all of a sudden that turns into over 100 holes of golf well and truly by the end of the week.
We head into the last day. Two of the most highest profile golfers going around at the moment, Scott Scheffler playing out of his skin, Rory McIlroy up against Sam Burns and Cam Young, both very accomplished golfers, but certainly you would expect on name and ability, supposedly, it would have been a Scheffler and McIlroy final, but they played off for 3rd and 4th. Incredible.
Yeah, the consolation final they ended up playing for. I know the sponsors certainly wanted the Scheffler-McIlroy final, and number 1 and 2 in the world now. So it wasn't quite the dream scenario. And I think, you know, on that final day, most of the crowds were following the consolation match rather than the final, that's for sure. And to be honest, last thing I think Scheffler and Rory want to do is go out and play a consolation match. I think if you lose in the semi-final, you just call it tied 3rd and let's just keep going.
Absolutely. Sam Burns dominating in the end, a very good golfer in his own right, slightly below the top echelon, but not far away from it. And Cam Young, who has had a pretty impressive last 12 months as well, but he seemed to just run out of gas.
Yeah, he did. It was 6 and 5 in the final, not the final that the sponsors and the tournament was hoping for, unfortunately. Sam Burns is good mates with Scotty Scheffler, so that was a tough match in that regard, and they ended up going, I think, what was it, 21 holes in the end or something like that. So it was neck and neck the whole way for them. But the final, I mean, Cam Young, he almost won the Open Championship last year, finished runner-up to Cam Smith. But you watch him go at the ball and, oh my gosh, my back gets sore whenever I watch him swing. But hopefully he can stay healthy for his career, because he's an outstanding young player, and Sam Burns is just really making a name for himself now. I mean, he played Ryder Cup last year and President's Cup, so he's got a big future ahead of him. And American golf, I mean, they're looking the goods right now.
Nick, if I look at Scotty Scheffler, number 1 ranked golfer in the world today, if I looked at him, and I just say I wasn't looking at Head and Shoulders, I didn't know who it was, but I looked when he's swinging, but his knees and below, and where he appears to lose all sorts of balance and rhythm there, but it's just another illustration that there are many, many ways to play golf.
Oh, it certainly is. The funny thing is, Mark Allen and I, we do a podcast here in Australia called Talk Birdie to Me, and one of the things he was talking about the other day, he plays at Kingston Heath, obviously one of the great courses here in Australia, and he said a while back, if I watch Scotty Scheffler swing and you watch his footwork, he wouldn't be on the pennant team in Kingston Heath, you know, because there's so many other better golf swings at Kingston Heath. And yet the guy's number one in the world. It is fascinating to watch, but it just goes to show that there is definitely more than one way to swing a golf club and move your body. And it's actually very similar to the swings we saw more in the 80s, the lower body leg action of Greg Norman and Mark Calcavecchia, where the foot was sliding all over the place. But he matches it up beautifully. And I just love watching him trying to hit draws, because he's a left to right player. You know, he usually hits a fade. But then when he tries to hit the draws, which you'll need to do at Augusta coming up, all of a sudden the upper body just goes into a spin like you've never seen before. It's just fascinating viewing. And he's such a lovely guy too. It's great to see him at number one. You want those sorts of, you know, people that are leading the way in the game of golf, rather than, I guess, the more controversial ones, you could say.
One of the most fascinating holes on the Austin Country Club is the 13th. It's the drivable par 4 over water. It's a risk or reward holes. I love that kind of, I love that in golf, actually. Nick, what about you? Are you a fan of risk and reward?
Oh, absolutely. My favourite holes are always the short par 4s, short par 5s or short par 3s, to be honest. And I mean, the most, I guess, fascinating par 3 is 17 at Sawgrass in that regard, with the water all around, and it's only a wedge. But then you get these short par 4s like 10 at Riviera. You mentioned 13 there at Austin Country Club, even 18 there where Rory McIlroy drove the green in one of his matches to close it out. That was unbelievable. But I love the par 5s where you got to stand in the fairway and go, well, I know it's a two-shot hole, but if I do take it on, I could also make 6 or 7 pretty quick. And, you know, 13 at Augusta is the prime example of that. So these 520-yard par 4s, no, thank you. I just give me these shorter holes all day long.
Yeah, I just think they're such a great spectacle, and it brings every element into the game, and including the crowds, and stadium golf certainly is becoming their thing. One of the other reasons we needed to really get you on, Nick, is because you've done this. You've played in the Masters, and you have driven down Magnolia Lane, which is a right for members and players only as such. Tell us a wee bit about the week leading up to the Masters, which the current crop are about to go through.
The weekend before in my first Masters, just to sort of soak it all in and get there before the crowds, because come Monday morning, obviously the patrons, as they call them there, they're not galleries or spectators, the patrons come in and they flock all over the grounds, and it gets a little bit chaotic. So my first trip there was on the weekend before, and I did exactly what you're saying, drove down Magnolia Lane, and it's just like, it's like being a kid in a candy store, to be honest, and almost deer in headlights at the same time, because my first trip, I went straight to the 10th tee. I didn't take my clubs with me. I just walked the 10th, the back nine. I just wanted to see what it was all about, because I've watched the event on TV for so many years. And when I got to that 10th tee the first time on the Saturday, there was two guys teeing off, and it just happened to be Tiger Woods and Marco Mira. So I sort of followed them for a couple of holes. And then my favourite place on that golf course is the 12th green, 13th tee area, because you know the patrons can't get over that side. The only people that have been over there are playing members or people who have played in the tournaments, things like that. So it's a very unique place. Look, Augusta, you wouldn't go there, you know, as a tourist to visit the town itself. It's not the nicest town, but once you get inside those gates, everything changes, and it's just almost a spiritual experience in a way. And, you know, the golf club, the members, the way they do it, it's just second to none. And hats off to them. You know, even just down to the little things like, you know, when you buy a Coke and a sandwich or something like that, they don't charge an arm and a leg. They just charge minimal amount. So it's a very affordable experience for everyone that's in there. The hardest part is getting a ticket, obviously. But if you ever get a chance to go, it's one of the most unique tournaments, if not the most unique tournament in the world.
It's a bucket list, certainly, for me. I just can't wait to get there at some point. Nick, this year they have made too many changes, I believe, to the course, although they've tried to lengthen 13. You talk about that corner, which is the quiet corner. So they've pushed that tee back a wee bit to make 13 a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, 50 yards is what I heard, or 40 yards maybe. They had to buy more land up over at Augusta Country Club, which is the next door. Not Augusta, is it? Yeah, I think it's called Augusta Country Club, the golf course next door. But they're just trying to make it so that all of a sudden players have more mid-irons and longer clubs as second shots into 13. And that's the issue we've got in the game at the moment. There's all this talk about rolling the ball back and things like that, which, you know, I think they should bifurcate the rules in that regard, just make one set of rules for pros playing at tour level, and then the rest of the amateurs, whoever plays, you can use whatever you want. But Augusta typically makes minor tweaks that are very, very hard to see unless you've been there and played there before. I mean, a prime example for me was the 11th hole, which is a long par four, dogleg to the right, second shots with the pond next to the green. And I remember standing on the tee in a practice round one year going, hang on, that tree that's in front of me over there on the left, that used to be behind me, but nothing looks any different. And when I went back into the clubhouse and I spoke to the guys in the locker room, I asked them about it, and they said, yeah, they moved the tee back 40 yards. And I said, but it looks exactly the same. He says, yeah, well, what they do here is they excavate the entire hill. They don't just move a tee back. They just get everything dug up and so that it looks exactly the same, but you just don't know unless you've been here before. And they do little tricks like that every year. They change the greens slightly, making the slopes just a little bit different, so the local caddies have to relearn the greens every year. It's very, very, very tricky on their part, and they love to play those mind games with the caddies and the members.
Well, talk about the members and the committee. They make their minds up who's going to play in the tournament, because they do issue invites still the old-fashioned way, which is fantastic, Nick. And interesting, this year they could have had a choice as which way they went, but they've decided to bring LIV golfers back into the fold, former winners, etc. And they'll be back together for the first time for quite some time in a pressure environment. How sweet for a LIV golf member to win it again. And how determined for conventions to stop that happening?
Yeah, there is quite a few of the LIV golfers who are past Masters champions. I mean, obviously you've got Dustin Johnson and Sergio Garcia, Bubba Watson, Charles Schwartz, the list goes on basically. And I completely understand why they are playing, and it's great to get the best players back in the world. If you win that golf tournament, you should be there. If you're top 50 in the world, which, you know, with the world rankings, that's obviously getting harder and harder for the LIV players now since they aren't being awarded ranking points. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be interested to see what their games are like, because I've taken notice of the last couple of LIV events, and the Cam Smiths, Dustin Johnsons, they haven't been in very good form. Now, whether that's a lack of playing or practice or what, or just competitive reps, the issue they've got is this week, I think there's a LIV event on in Orlando, and they're playing at a golf course which is all Bermuda and nothing like what they're going to encounter next week at Augusta National. So their preparation will not be good. And if they don't have any form going in, they're going to have to try and find it as they tee it up. And that's a very difficult thing to do. So they may be seeing some of the fallout, I guess, of going to LIV and not being able to play week in, week out like all these other players who have been grinding it out on the PGA Tour and the European Tour and so on. So we'll see how they go. I mean, there might be one that just sort of rises from the bunch and catches a bit of a hot streak, I guess, come the weekend at Augusta. But wouldn't it be fascinating to see the last pairing of a LIV golfer and a PGA Tour golfer together? That'd be quality TV.
Would it not? You're absolutely right there. Patrick Reed or someone of that nature strolling up 18 alongside Rory McIlroy, that would be tasty. But you make a good point about the golf, the standard of golf they're playing and the regularity of that. And of course, when you're playing on the PGA Tour time after time, you get pressure all the time. You get pressure almost every week if you want. And here's a great example from us living in New Zealand. Danny Lee. Journeyman, absolute journeyman, won the Greenbrier, it seems like forever ago, but really struggles to make a cut from time to time, strolls across, makes the decision to stroll across, wins, what, 4.6 mil American, 6.4 New Zealand dollars million. And to me, that's a great illustration of the point you're just making.
Yeah, well, he's probably thinking this is the best business decision I've ever made, obviously. But it's exactly right. I mean, when you go to LIV, I mean, I don't know because I'm not over there, obviously, but I've played in events where there is guaranteed money and it's more of a, not a hit and giggle, but there's less competition, less pressure, and certainly the expectation's lower, and a lot of the time you do play a little bit better. But I would imagine what we're seeing, I think, when the players first go to LIV, they play well because they think, oh, this is great. You know, I'm just going to enjoy myself. I've got guaranteed money coming in. if I have a good week, great. If I don't, doesn't really matter. But I think as these events go on, when you get more to the middle, back end of the season, you can almost see the form starting to diminish out of the 48 players. And sure, there's going to be a half dozen or a dozen that may play well week in and week out. But the difference between the winning scores and the worst scores are getting almost wider and wider. Whereas on the PGA Tour, what you'll find is to make a cut, I mean, you obviously have to shoot under par now. And the bunching of the players and the depth is just incredible. And I think we'll see that depth definitely widening on the LIV Tour as it goes along, just because there is no consequence to what they're doing. They're not really grinding it out to make a cut or anything like that. So that's the choice they've made, and I completely understand. They've gone for, you know, that guaranteed source of income. And look, hats off to Danny Lee. It was a great win for him, but is it going to be remembered? You know, probably not. I'm more interested in watching Ryan Fox play the Masters next week, because you know he's putting together a great career, and you must all be very proud of him to be representing the country over there.
We absolutely are, and we kind of figure that we'd love to see him more playing in America, but it's probably just me talking selfishly. There's a nice crop of golfers who sort of drifted away, who are starting to just sort of ease their way back, and I'm putting Ricky Fowler in there, I'm talking Jordan Spieth in there, and I'm putting Jason Day in there. Of course, he was second back in 2011. Jason Day looks the goods all of a sudden.
He certainly does, and at the start of the year, he wasn't in the Masters, obviously top 50 get in, and he was ranked about 115 in the world at that time, you know, come 1st of January, and this year he's played seven events and hasn't finished outside the top 20, so that's remarkable golf. He's had five top 10s, and is just he's got it back. You know, he's got his body under control, he's injury-free. That was always a big issue for him throughout his career because of the speeds he went at it, but he's been working with his new coach, Chris Como, and they've sorted that out as well. So I'm excited for him at the Masters. You know, as you said, he finished runner-up in 2011, maybe third in 2013 when Adam Scott won, and then had a top five when Tiger won in 2019. So with his form going in, you could say he's one of the favourites, but he's almost in a great position because no one's really expecting him to win, but he knows he's playing well. He has great history there, and he could be a real shot at it. And the other one that's got me excited to see how he plays there is Minwoo Lee as well, because he's an excitement machine, this young man from Western Australia, and anything's possible with him. He could miss the cut, or he could, you know, be contending in the last group on a Sunday. Who knows?
Mick, always great catching up with you. Mouth-watering prospect. Just before we let go, we're hearing unprecedented numbers and levels of interest for Adelaide for LIV. Are you hearing that?
I am, yeah. I heard it's all sold out. You know, Australia wants to see these players that they never get a chance to see. So I'll be there. Well, I won't be there, but I'll be fascinated to see how the tournament goes and how it's run, and to see Greg Norman back and the reception he gets, obviously. And, you know, at the end of the day, we all just want to see great golf. And if it's in a different style of format to what we're seeing, so be it. But, you know, you call me old school, I still love the old 72-hole, you know, grinded-out type golf. But it's nice to see something different. And in that point, you know, let's hope some sort of form of the match play comes back, because at this stage, the match play seems to be gone. But I hope it comes back, because we need more players playing that style of golf, I think.
Enjoy it. Enjoy talking to you too, Nick. And thanks so much for your time. A lot to look forward to in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Go well. Thank you.
Thanks, Millie. Cheers. Enjoy.